each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. Thanks for tuning in to The Winds of Change. It's Wednesday. That means Father Tom Kois is here with you. And open to wrinkle your brain a bit here as we continue to dive.
And now it begins.
The brain wrinkling begins. That's all we can say, right? I feel heavy again because I feel I'm pushed to try to make some sense.
My Lord, such destruction.
That's what we're sensing or feeling, and we got to rebuild, re-sanctify, reinvigorate a sense of the proper balance between good and evil when we're faced with tremendous challenges within the church, within our nation today. As a believer, you got to believe that things are, God can see us through so much, right? So God can see us through so much. And like the good Jimmy Stewart said in that great movie, It's a Wonderful Life, we can get through this all right. We can get through this all right if we just stick together. And that's not only stick together, which is a reference to just a kind of bond, a loyalty to one another by virtue of some classification, but it doesn't necessarily point to a bond that points to an immutable eternal truth. And that's what some of this these controversies that we're facing today, the sex abuse scandals, and the remaking of evangelization, I think, is one way to put it, as a remaking of how we want to say that this is what I believe, why I believe it, inviting other people to share in that same truth. So today I'm going to start out with an image that I threw at my parishioners last week, in regard to trying to describe the crisis situation in the church today. And that is, we're going to get a sort of a supernatural perspective on the very mundane and worldly things that we are involved in. And that supernatural perspective is going to come from Batman, because Batman is a great icon in my educational career. And there it is. And that's the true theme of Batman. It's not really the Dark Knight of the new kinds of Batman, but I'm talking about the real Batman, the Batman of the 70s, the Batman of Adam West and such. The reason I'm saying that, it kind of hit me as an image that we need to explore, and it's granted I'm sharing this image with you, which is never before used to connect Batman to the crisis of the church, which is what we're passing through today. But give me a little time, and maybe it will make sense. I also very much want to share a very, very interesting talk by Cardinal George a few years back, of course, God rest his soul. There was a conference in honor of the 50th anniversary of the proclamation of Humanae Vitae, that Catholic encyclical by Pope Paul VI that got that started a tsunami of a sense. And Cardinal George has a very interesting twist. It sort of explains. I'm going to use some of the things he says to sort of explain where we're at, why we're at, where we're at, etc. So, and then if possible, I do love relating the issues of today to the reality of heaven. And hopefully we can get to some Peter Crafton, some of his very interesting, great points he makes in that classic book, Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About Heaven. And after all, it's got to be a great field of discussion, because heaven pushes us into the eternal. And if what happens and what we do here on earth doesn't affect or matter in regards to what heaven will be like, then we have quite a different sense of what religion is. And that's going to lead me to back to Batman here, because it came to me that the crisis that the church is facing should not be just seen as a problem with the administration. It certainly is a problem with administration. But those who are not in the administration, I encourage you to think about the answer to the question, how did we get here? How did the administrators fumble the ball, to use a football analogy so much? And there seems to be a very logical, if you could see the logic behind what I'm going to try to point out, you get a little bit scared, you get a little bit it's a call to deeper, holier, more intense prayer and self-sacrifice and deeper conviction and a commitment to moral principles. Because the where Batman comes into this story, it comes from, I can't remember which episode. Oh, yeah, well, there.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
That's good. There's one. I'll just keep track of it as long as we get brain wrinkles. The episode, I can't remember which episode, but I'm quite sure it was in an old Batman episode where there was a Batman was captured, and the Joker or the Riddler or one of the bad guys invented a machine that would change their brains, or take a brain and put it into the other, take a brain from one person, put it in the other. And so Batman was captured, he's tied up, he's sitting in a chair, and they put on like a metal hat that has all sorts of wires coming out of it. It's attached to a machine, and the machine is attached to another chair, and the Joker or the Riddler, whoever, whichever bad guy it is, doesn't really matter, but they find the greatest criminal mind in history or in the world, and they're going to do a brain transfer from the criminal mind, and they're going to switch it and put it into Batman's brain, Batman's head. And so the reason that image comes to me. I just want you to keep that image in mind. Because obviously, oh, okay.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, and the Joker is about to wrinkle Batman's brain. You know, the if the experiment is a success, Batman comes out of the experiment, and now he wants to go rob banks and tear down and shoot good guys and tear down City Hall. Chief O'Hara is in trouble because Batman now has the criminal mind. Okay, so just in that sense, I want to compare what's going on in the church because instead of just thinking plain simple brain, the brain function, let's use that analogy for our conscience. Our conscience, everyone has a conscience. And part of the job of the church, of course, is to form our conscience to be thinking along the lines of God so that we live and do things and act as God would have us and not do the things that God does not want us to do. And so that's, you know, what our conscience is. And it gets me to thinking that the danger of a real involved or a real established community I'll call them sodomistic tolerant or sodomistic participants within the clergy. I'm just trying to think of a way I could talk about this if there's any children listening. Maybe if you do have little ones, might not be the best show to tune into. A lot of times these topics are good. Religious topics are great for young and old minds, but this one is not so great for the younger minds, right? So I appreciate you understanding that. The conscience, if we analyze the conscience of said, we'll just use it as a gay clergy person. Now, up till now, we've been operating, the church has been operating since shortly after Vatican II, or maybe a little bit after Vatican II, certainly after the Dallas meeting of bishops back 14, 15 years ago, we've been sort of operating under the assumption that a gay man who promises not to do anything against the sin of chastity is ever bit as good as a heterosexual clergy person. But I want to call that into question because as we analyze the conscience and the principles that operate within each person's conscience, we discover an important flaw, an important difference. And this is where I get the Batman analogy. Because within the conscience of the gay clergy, you have to make an incredible distinction about how moral principles spring from the purposes of nature. Nature tends to have an end, or as we say in philosophy, a purpose, a goal. There are things whether we find in nature that flow from cause to effect, or as the nature of a thing is to be respected. The classic example would be something like an old priceless violin. You make although that's an artifact that human beings have made, but it makes the point that we reflect in nature as well. All you do is have to believe that God is the author of the things of nature, and the analogy of the violin works, because the violin, crafted as it is to make music, and to use it as a doorstop or a baseball bat would be silly. The doorstop might squish and wreck, and you could only use it once, or certainly as a baseball bat, you would only use it once as well before, and you might not even get a very good hit out of the thing. So that sense that our moral principles, the do this, don't do that, that is connected to an understanding of the nature of the thing we're talking about. And I may use the example of the violin, but when it comes to human morality, the thing that we're talking about is the human being. Obviously, and importantly, more than a thing. And so the classic Catholic moral principles that are operative in the classic moral conscience of a Catholic have always taken nature as a very important teacher, an important teacher, and therefore analyzing and trying to decipher what is nature trying to teach us by virtue of what happens with this or that. And of course, you have to do a lot of justifying if there is a same-sex attracted clergy person.
Whoa.
You just
wrinkled my brain, man.
There it is. Well, let me finish wrinkling in here, and then we'll take a quick break, because if the same-sex attracted clergy person has to sort of make an incredible kind of an attack or a question mark, a doubtful assessment of what nature is trying to lead one to conclude about a certain act. And of course, we could say the sexual activity has within it the bringing together of two opposite human beings of distinct human natures, in the sense that a man and a woman both share human nature, but they share it in quite different ways. And of course, life, passing on and the creation of the next generation is attached to those actions, not because we want them to or we don't want them to, but because they do. It's a fact of nature, as it were. So I got to come back. I got to unpack the Batman analogy, because really what I think we need to grapple with is the danger that the church is facing is bigger than what we think, not because of how high it goes into the hierarchy, although that's related to it, but because if allowed to stand, if not corrected, the poor conscience will continue to take over more and more people's brains. A poorly formed conscience creates the chaos. And so we as players in the great drama of life and the great drama of the church have to be very, very appreciative of how our conscience is formed. And we have to be very nervous or very attentive to forming our conscience correctly, because it doesn't automatically happen. The good is not just to be defined by what I want. And so we're in a dilemma, and the situation is quite challenging. Anyways, let's take a quick break here, and we'll come right back. I'm Father Tom Coy, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You're listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
On Saturday night,
October 6th, from 7 until 9, at St. Stanislaus Kostka, Father Angel Espinoza will give a special talk on the urgent need to train your children in the seven fields of true education. The talk will be in Spanish. Here's Cristina to tell you more.
El sábado 6 de octubre de 2018, en las 7 de la tarde a las 9 de la noche, la parroquia de San Estanislao Kostka y el Padre Ángel Espinoza los invitan a una conferencia sobre cómo les estamos enseñando a nuestros hijos la fe. ¿Estamos enseñando la fe popular y nada más por encima? ¿O realmente estamos enseñándoles a vivir la fe de una manera profunda, a practicarla diariamente en su vida? Regístrate y compra tu boleto de $30 en la página del web www.ststanschurch.org. El cupo es limitado. Solo se venderán 5 boletos por persona. Para más información, favor de llamar a la parroquia al 773-278-2470. De nuevo, 773-278-2470. De nuevo, el sábado 6 de octubre del 2018, de las 7 de la tarde a las 9 de la noche, en la iglesia de San Estanislao Kostka, ubicada al 1327 Norte de la Noble, en Chicago. Los esperamos.
For complete information and ticket purchase information, go to ststanschurch.org and click on the Events tab.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule, work, or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
There we go. Thank you very much, Nick. That is a fine introduction. The theme of Batman is before us because I'm trying to open our eyes to a problem that admittedly is a theological, philosophical problem that is carrying the day, shall we say, carrying the day, the scandals of the sex abuse problems within the church, primarily majority of the instances are male on male, of course, and the majority of those are not with children that are classically defined as children for pedophilia, but with adolescents and adults. So the church, we have to recover the seriousness of the errors of accepting a change in our conscience, that brings about a kind of openness that has ushered in almost an inability to say not this and no more, shall we say. We can't, that something is possible does not mean it should be allowed, as it were. I want to use a story I found in on a CNN post. It was a story by Daniel Burke, Rosa Flores, and Kevin Conlon just the other day, September 3rd. And it's a story because Cardinal Wuerl, Cardinal Archbishop of Washington, D.C., offered Mass in his diocese. And, of course, there must have been a whole bunch of video cameras clicking away. And anyways, there was video footage of the Cardinal's remarks, and he touched on the Pennsylvania grand jury report, which a lot of the cases that were brought out were cases that happened during Cardinal Wuerl's time in Pittsburgh. There's calls for his resignation. There's calls for investigation, etc. And so the cardinal did offer a kind of apology. He said, "Can you forgive me for not always have doing most properly what needed to be done?" And so the CNN article focused on two reactions. One was the a man yelled out, "Shame on you," and walked out of church. And of course, the CNN journalists grab him and try to get some more words from him. Then there was another woman that was in the choir loft, whether or not she was a choir member or not is to be determined. But anyway, she was in the choir loft, and while the cardinal was speaking, she turned her back to the altar, their hands folded, and expressed her protestation in that manner. So of course CNN got some words from her. So I analyze this, and I call it a tale of two angers. A tale of two angers. I don't know the fullness, and I'm just going with the simple little phrases that the article shows. But I think there is danger in getting the wrong kind of anger. I think there is justifiable anger, and the first guy may be in the category of justifiable anger. Because here's what he says, and then I want to bring out something in the article that is very important about the second person. The first person that did shout out, "Shame on you," we'll just call him Brian. I'm not going to give his full name, but anyways, Brian says to the CNN reporter, he says, "Well, I don't think he," meaning Cardinal Wuerl, "is a monster. He doesn't, but I wish he would talk less about defending himself and more about his failings." Now there's a deep challenge. Failings in what manner? Of course, dealing with the cases, but then I want to push the envelope and just say how the church in general has failed in the constant and eternal task of properly forming our conscience. That's why I use the Batman analogy from the brain transfer. It seems that the collective church, from high on up, has had a brain transfer. The conscience that is operative in a same-sex attracted clergy person has been adopted as the form of conscience for the church in general. And that being a big difference, a tremendous abandoning of the kind of moral principles and the kind of conscience formation that has heretofore been operative within Catholic doctrine and moral teachings. Brian, in the interview with CNN, goes on to say, "It's a little galling to be lectured on transparency by people who are lying to us. I wish he would talk to us as a pastor and not a politician. You know, and that's certainly a common sentiment. I hear that quite a bit. I loathe to just be a political voice from the pulpit as a priest in my situation. And yet I know how oftentimes the message of the gospel carries with it a moral message, and morality has to be part, well, in the classic sense, morality has always been part of a political goal or end, and therefore there are moral things that are part of the gospel. As a matter of fact, without having moral principles as part of the gospel, then believing in Jesus, believing in God, believing in the Blessed Trinity, believing in whatever God you would want to say becomes very subjective and relativistic vis-a-vis the way we live. And then vis-a-vis, we'll bring this theme back in, vis-a-vis our view of what heaven would be like, our view of who and what God is in and of himself, that'd be our destiny. So anyways, in this little article from the CNN post, this first guy, Brian, seems to be, well, he's obviously angry, but it doesn't completely get into the why of the angry as much as the second person. And though I'm sure, certainly, it's worth going into the why, yeah. But that second level is a deeper level, and that needs, most people don't like to go into the deeper level. You're listening to Winds of Change now. You like tuning into the radio, and you by nature, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, you as a listener do tend to want to go deeper than first reaction or a first feeling that one gets when confronted with a particular problem, like we are being confronted with the very particular problem of corruption within clergy. But here's the other person, and we're just going to call her Mary, because we're not going to give her full name. But Mary was interviewed by the CNN journalist. She's the one who turned her back on Cardinal Wuerl. And she says this, just plain and simple, "I think he should resign," Mary told CNN. I think he should understand that just because you didn't mean to do something doesn't mean that there weren't terrible consequences for lots of people. Well, in that, I understand what she's saying. Sincerity alone is not the ultimate moral principle. And here we go again, you know, comparing the way consciences are formed, the principles that make up our conscience. A strongly formed Catholic conscience will recognize that sincerity, though important, is not a guarantor at all of reaching the will of God or the truth of what God is trying to teach us in the world. But here's where it gets a little sticky, because the interviewer. Later in the interview, Mary says that she is a devout Catholic. Now that's an important little self-approbation or self-declaration. I am a devout Catholic, and I come from a family that has always protested the church when they felt it was necessary. Okay, loyal dissent, loyal opposition. That's a very... understandable position to take when you think someone's doing something wrong, and then you call them out on that. And so she's saying that's how she is, and that's the family she came from. Listen to this. Here's the next phrase that flows. And of course, a CNN reporter is not going to make a connection that I'm going to make here, but and I hope you can see. Because right after she says she comes from a family where protesting the church was done, she says she can recall a time as a child when she and her father walked out of church to protest Pope Paul VI's birth control encyclical.
Wow.
There.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
This is key, my friends. This is very key, because we're going to try to establish or try to see more clearly the distinction between the kinds of anger that are present. Right now, there's lots of anger, of course, every which way. But I need you to pray about this and think about this very, very sincerely. Her anger for the sex abuse matters is, in her mind, perfectly harmonious with her anger with the church's teaching about artificial birth control. And in that, we need to see an incredible corner you paint yourself into, an incredible kind of contradiction that you have to live with. I need to point out that contradiction, which is not a paradox. Paradoxes can be very beautiful, can be wonderful ways of explaining deep mysteries that we don't have the complete capacity to understand. G.K. Chesterton is the master of bringing to our mind's eye wonderful paradoxes. Once we see a paradox, we see sort of like an interplay between two thoughts, two positions, two actions, two ideologies, as it were. And it is an important interplay, an important paradox. But what she's opening herself up to is not a paradox, but a contradiction, okay? So let's take another break here now, and I got to unpack this a little bit and see if we can get to what Cardinal George said in a very, very interesting, it's very revelatory, at least in my humble opinion, so we'll get right back. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
The Winds of Change.
The Winds of Change. On AM 750. WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
On Saturday night, October 6th, from 7 until 9, at St. Stanislaus Kostka, Father Angel Espinoza will give a special talk on the urgent need to train your children in the seven fields of true education. The talk will be in Spanish. Here's Cristina to tell you more.
El sábado 6 de octubre de 2018, a las 7 de la tarde a las 9 de la noche, la parroquia de San Stanislao Kostka y el Padre Ángel Espinosa los invitan a una conferencia sobre cómo les estamos enseñando a nuestros hijos la fe. Estamos enseñando la fe popular y nada más por encima? ¿O realmente estamos enseñándoles a vivir la fe de una manera profunda, a practicarla diariamente en su vida? Regístrate y compra tu boleto de $30 en la página del web www.ststanschurch.org. El cupo es limitado. Solo se venderán 5 boletos por persona. Para más información, favor de llamar a la parroquia al 773-278-2470. De nuevo, 773-278-2470. De nuevo, el sábado 6 de octubre del 2018, de las 7 de la tarde a las 9 de la noche, en la iglesia de San Estanislao Kostka, ubicada al 1327 Norte de la Noble en Chicago. Los esperamos.
For complete information and ticket purchase information, go to ststanschurch.org and click on the events tab.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Kois here, trying to make sense of the craziness of our world and our church today. I'm trying to develop the theme of conscience and how our consciences are formed and the principles that operate within that conscience. And I'm making a case for the fact that the hierarchy, and not all, of course, certainly not all, but a significant portion of them that have allowed the abuses to go unchallenged, as it were, that conscience is formed differently, and it is formed by principally the ideas and principles that are operative in a same-sex attracted community of people. And so and the acceptance has become so widespread. I'm going to tie it to something. You know, I've used the analogy or the approach to the American experiment, as it were, especially in the founding of the United States, and the deep sense that many of our principles of conscience, we could say, within the American psyche, came from Protestantism, because so many of the early founders of the United States were present. I need to connect some of these dots here. Let's listen to Eric Schweikart, who's a great American historian, but I think I've used this before. Let's see if I can get it here for...
Indeed, America is known for religious tolerance. In fact, it is not an exaggeration to say that America, where people of all faiths are free to worship or not worship as they please, invented modern religious tolerance. To answer that...
Okay, so obviously that's a simple point that is very well accepted, of course, in the American conscience. That is, there should be absolute religious freedom for all religions. And therefore, we have a modern sense of tolerance that is a part of the American conscience. I got to go on a little bit more. He continues. It goes like this.
We have to look to America's origins, which were overwhelmingly religious and, to be precise, overwhelmingly Christian. To put it another way, America became the religiously open nation that we know today because it was first a Christian nation, specifically a Protestant one.
And I don't think that... I can't argue with him in his description, but I can raise it as an issue to see a root of our present problem, because the spirit of absolute religious tolerance spills over into absolute moral tolerance, even though nobody would say absolute, but it spills into the human sexuality issues and plans. One more, just for fun's sake. Let's see if we can get to him from, let's see. Oh, no. Well, what I want to share with you next is I think I referred to this before. Keep in mind, my friends, that the sense of absolute religious tolerance as being one of the fundamental platforms in the American conscience, all right? And the issue and the comparison with the different religions back in the early 18th century, the 1776 time, the beginning of the country, when one said, let us be tolerant of all religions, it primarily meant, let us be tolerant of all Protestant denominations. And actually, except for Catholicism, was the bad man out, so to speak, in the community of religions. There were Protestant denominations and there were Catholics, a few, very, very, very few Jewish people, and that was about it. And of course, atheists and agnostics who would claim no religion at all. But what was not on the radar screen, of course, that is on the radar screen today is Islam. And if you contemplate the kind of conscience that Islam forms in a person's mind, and you try to use or try to analyze and see the place of tolerance and freedom plays within that conscience, there's something super revelatory. It reveals something that is very hidden, and it's a challenge to deal with, as it were. But if you were to look at Stanford University's yearbook from the year 1977, that was the year that Valerie Jarrett graduated Stanford. Valerie Jarrett, if you remember, was chief of staff in Barack Obama's presidential cabinet. And she, I think her chief of staff, but a highly involved advisor in one position or another. And in that yearbook, we find her her words that says this. Remember, back in 1977, I am an Iranian by birth and of my Islamic faith. I am also an American citizen. And I seek to help change America to be a more Islamic country. My faith guides me, and I feel like it is going well in the transition of using freedom of religion in America against itself. That is a very interesting formulation. There's a revealing a part of her conscience that is not often revealed, you know. And maybe she was thinking idealistically, obviously, in her mind, back when she graduated, she was thinking that way. She probably never thought she'd be a national figure in a presidential cabinet, but she was. And she was, I'm sure, very grateful for the opportunity. But Let this soak in for a second, my friends. My faith guides me, and I feel like it is going well in the transition of using freedom of religion in America against itself. That's why I played that Swikart clip for you. I would consider him or classify him as an conservative evangelical Protestant who loves the United States of America and sees some great challenges and difficulties. He's at the forefront of fighting the battle against historic revisionism that is trying to kind of strip any goodness out of the American experiment and just he's trying to say and show that though the American colonists and Americans throughout 200 years of history, though they weren't saints or perfect in every way, they did a lot of good. And I think there's a lot of us that agree with that assessment, though obviously there's a lot that don't. Let me go back to what that Mary said as she was protesting Cardinal Wuerl's little apology and presumed cover-up of some of the really wicked cases that came before him when he was in Pittsburgh. And I'm sure there were cases in Washington, D.C. as well, as we're finding out almost every diocese has this. But let me mention again that it's primarily a problem with regard to the way conscience deals with same-sex attraction actions involved. And the what she said about her dissent, she walked out of church because the church was wrong when it spoke against artificial contraception. That's why she's from a family of protesters. Now here's something new to protest. But what I need to point out, what we need to see, is the contradiction that opens its ugly head or ugly something. I don't know how am I. Okay. She also says, "I, speaking for myself, do not approve of the way the church has handled this scandal for the past 16 years. We want to hear about the facts from the church, not a grand jury." So that's also a common theme, and I think the church, in order to regain that sense of a moral authority, will have to do a little more explaining, and there would have to be a great deal of apologies offered. Whether or not those apologies will be accepted or not is quite a different thing, right? But deep down, too, the reason the Batman analogy for today is that let's keep on referring to the way consciences are formed, and let's put it this way: a person who does not have same-sex attraction, that they can make impure sins or immoral acts. Of course they can. But when they're recognized as a wrong, they're not recognized. There's no seeking to justify the deed itself. There's probably a great deal of seeking to justify the reasons for, you know, somebody who would be unfaithful would have a lot of reasons why I did that, but there's no searching for the principled reason, a justification of the deed itself. It's not perverted in that sense.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah. I'm afraid my brain is wrinkled too here in all of this. The same-sex attracted person, they may not be unfaithful in the sense of, okay, one partner is the only requirement needed for good moral behavior in this regard. That two men or two women that are exercised in physical deeds with each other, they're saying, yeah, but we're monogamous. Unfortunately, that's very rare for number one, but even granting them the sense that they are telling the truth, that's not the only moral determinant. That's a little phrase that's an important word to use. The things that determine the moral or immorality of a deed. So this woman that was protesting Cardinal Wuerl was saying that she declared, she has two things in her mind. One, that the church was wrong about artificial contraception. What does that mean? What it means is the church is wrong in saying that the relations between men and women should be open for life. In other words, not using artificial contraception. The church is wrong about that, so that means what's right is the ability, the right, the goodness, the blessedness of that of engaging in the marital act without being open to life is a very good thing, and it becomes the phrase that's often used is it becomes sterile. Relations, sterile action, sterile sex, sexuality. And so once that insight is gained, then there really is no moral or philosophical, theological ground to stand on to say that two men who are engaging in something, it's obviously sterile. It can't produce children. So if contraceptive sex between heterosexuals is right and not wrong, then you can't say that what two men or two women are doing with and for each other is wrong. The strange case, there's a strange contradiction. When a scandal is found, especially these things happen, and let us say two adult men priests are found engaging in something they call sex, but it's not really. To say that's a scandal is to unwittingly say that Humanae Vitae was right. What I mean by that is to say it was a scandal is to say they're doing something wrong. To say they're doing something wrong is to say that sexual relations shouldn't be sterile. They should be open to life. You get it?
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, that is unfortunate the way. There's this strange contradiction that's floating around, and people like Mary, who protested Cardinal Wuerl for whatever administrative guffaws and cover up that he did, I'm saying that should be more deeply known, and yet if all these cases and all the cases of the way the bishops handled cases were settled, if we don't straighten out our conscience and the way our consciences are formed, we're not going to solve it. We need to solve the principles that operate within our conscience, and that, my friends, is what prayer and study and faithfulness to the authentic teachings of the Church gives us. I'm Father Tom Coyce. You've been listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? Such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The